Hey, Seth, thank you so much for being here to talk about your new HBO Max show, Santa Incorporated. How has it been going for you after this has been released?
Well, I smoked a lot of weed, and it's been not going as great as I wish.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm seeing that. I've got your Rotten Tomato score pulled up here. It looks like you got a 4% audience average here.
Yeah, you know, me and Silverman, we made this new show, and we expected everyone to like it. I mean, we're talking about Christmas, Santa, elves, all the things people know.
So what do you attribute this such low score on Rotten Tomatoes? I mean, 4%, that is just inexplicably low.
Well, we made this vaccine and Holocaust joke, right? Mm-hmm. And it was great. Mm-hmm. And then we also have been just pooping on white people and all this kind of stuff in the show. And that's the stuff that Americans love. Americans love it when people tell them that they are pieces of garbage.
So why exactly did Americans not love it in this case? Can you please explain?
Well, obviously because they're racist. And that's why we made the show. You know, because you have to make a show that showcases people being... you have to showcase this racism.
Right, right.
So that people can understand. But the fact that they don't like it just shows that they are Nazis.
Absolutely, Seth. Anything more you want to share before we let you go today on the program?
We're working on a new show.
Uh-huh.
That's Santa, and he's gay.
Oh.
And he smokes weed.
Love that.
And he comes out and says, Los Angeles actually isn't that bad. When in reality, well, that's what I said on Twitter.
Love it. Love this idea. Yeah. Guys, keep on the lookout for Seth Rogen's next project. If he's lucky, maybe it'll score a 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. That would be great, wouldn't it, Seth?
Dare to dream.
And scene. Guys, welcome to Will and Amala Live on this beautiful Thursday. I hope you guys are doing well. Hope the world is treating you well. Hope you guys are getting in the holiday feel. Hopefully not by watching Santa Inc. Featuring Seth Rogen and Sarah Silverman on HBO Max, because that would be a travesty. But if you do, you can go give it a low score on Rotten Tomatoes, which can be fun.
When was the last time Seth Rogen actually starred in a movie? And when was the last time that Seth Rogen starred in a movie that I actually wanted to watch?
Didn't he do that grocery store movie where like people were doing voiceovers for like hot dogs and eggs and all that stuff? That's and it was like a cartoon.
Movie. Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I know what you're
talking about. I never saw or heard.
I know what you're talking about. Seth Rogen is not a good actor, first of all. Sarah Silverman is totally unfunny. I mean, these are two talentless people making a show.
Honestly, yeah. And they're just, you know, Sarah Silverman has her moments for me. Who called out the other day? She called out Joy Reid the other day on Twitter was like, hey, Joy Reid, actually report the news because you suck, which is pretty cool. I was like, that's cool, Sarah.
It's obviously not cool. Look at this stupid show. This is horrible.
Well, I mean, you win a little, you lose a little. You win a little, you lose a lot when it comes to Sarah Silverman. Yeah. But the fact that she called out Joy Reid on Twitter, you know how we always
get
into this.
The bar is so low.
Yeah.
For if anytime any celebrity like says anything that like makes a tiny iota of sense, we're like,
right,
oh my gosh, guys, like they actually
this
said
is
something.
A win, yeah, baby. Yeah, but yeah, I'll give Sarah Silverman that, but I'm not going to give her a high score on Rotten Tomatoes for this show. We're going to get into that story and several others. We're going to talk about the low rate of both marriage and nuclear families in America. We're going to talk about grocery stores in New Brunswick, Canada, refusing to allow people to buy food due to their vaccination status. We're also going to talk about how Hispanic voters do not particularly like the term Latinx. You know, that term that's being shoved down our throat and saying that we should refer to all Hispanic people as Latinx. Turns out Hispanic people don't like that. We're going to get to that. But first, let's talk Seth Rogen. So Seth Rogen put out a show called Santa Inc. It's on HBO Max if you guys dare to watch it, if you really would like to make yourself miserable and suffer through that. But here's one of the jokes featured in the show. This was shared on Twitter. Good news, sir. More American kids, speaking to Santa, more American kids believe in you than they do in vaccines or the Holocaust. Wow.
Based society.
Wow.
How crazy is that? You know,
that
these
is
are the
really
type of
crazy
jokes that they, I don't get, I mean, this is HBO. How do the writers of this show, how did someone greenlight, I mean, you guys, I urge you to watch a trailer. We're not going to watch it here because it's full of expletives and just, it's vulgar and disgusting. How did someone at HBO or some of these writers say, yep, this is what people want to see. Let's put this out. This is great.
Yeah, you know, and I'm a big advocate for comedy. I think anything under the sun can be joked about it. There is nothing offensive that you can joke about when it comes to comedy. Like, by all means, go for it and run for it. But you also should try to tell good jokes when you do it.
I totally
agree. That's the key.
I think pretty much everything can be in that vein if done correctly.
Right.
And, but these aren't for jokes. These are for cheap political tricks.
Right.
Clapter.
Yeah, clapter.
Yep.
You know, that is what it is all about.
But don't worry, because Seth Rogen has come out and he has a complete explanation for why his ratings are so low.
Well, first of all, you didn't show the screenshot of the third screenshot. Did I move the camera off before from that tweet? It's after the first two slideshows of the tweet of the jokes, then it shows you the screenshot of the score on YouTube.
Yeah, here's the response to it. It got 3K likes, 106K.
Yeah. And now to see that, how they got that image, I mean, you have to... I'm not going to say hack, but you have to like set up your browser in a way that you can bypass YouTube's new rules for not showing dislikes and go and actually show the dislikes. But that this is one of the reasons why they turned off dislikes on YouTube. Wow, 3,000 people like it and you can't see the dislikes? People must really be loving this. They turned off the comments on their video as well. I mean, I urge all of you guys. Well, actually, I don't urge you because some of them were pretty bad. But the amount of comments that were on that video gave me, it kind of restored my faith in humanity a little bit. That there are people who saw this and said, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And yeah.
Right. It's like, don't get too discouraged because there's a lot of people who are out there who agree with you. They just happen to be a little quiet about it. But a dislike button is something that everybody can do and they don't feel afraid to do right now.
Right. It's like going into the voting booth and not telling anyone, saying, oh, I'm going to vote for the Democrats. And then you go in there and you know who you're voting for.
Right. Exactly. Right?
You don't have to show people.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. You get to do that with some sort of anonymity and it makes people feel better about doing it. Yeah.
So the same thing that YouTube started this policy because the same thing happened with the Fauci documentary that they did and a few other things with lately. And then the opposite happened with Rotten Tomatoes. Like the critic score was super low for like Dave Chappelle. But the audience score was like 99% and the critics was like 2% or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like, they don't represent the view. They know they hate you. They don't care what you think. It's like, we'll make this for ourselves to pat ourselves on the back at and get the clapter of our echo chamber friends, and you guys just eat it.
Yeah, it's like they said, how about guys, we create good content that people like so that we don't really have to worry about, you know, the like or dislike ratio, or we just let people dislike things. They go, no, we want to push our agenda, and if people dislike that agenda, we can't let other people know that. God forbid.
You sound like an extremist.
I know. Are they really? I mean, it is really extreme to try to hide people's opinions of your content because you don't like the messages that they send through doing that.
It's so cheap and easy to put out messages like this. I remember an old video of Norm Macdonald. Norm Macdonald was hosting, or like he was a judge on this stand-up show.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the name of the show is, but this one guy came in trashing the Bible and comparing it to J.K. Rowling and all these things. And Norm was just like, this is a cheap joke. It wasn't very funny. You obviously didn't do your research, all of this. It was great, you know, Norm Macdonald coming and doing that. Because these types of jokes, like they try and say, oh, I'm brave for making these types of left-wing jokes. You're not brave. You are the establishment. Everyone in Hollywood agrees with you. Everyone in the mainstream media agrees with you. How are you brave for making these jokes? You know, putting Americans at the butt of your jokes, people who support the values of this country. I mean, that is what they want to make fun of. That is what postmodernism is. They want to destroy the old and end with this stupid new.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care. Make fun of Americans all you want, but do it well. That's my only thing. Just don't make a horrible joke. Just like be good at your craft.
It's just malicious. It's not because they want to make people laugh or bring joy to people. It is because they want to shame someone through the guise of comedy.
Yeah. It's like I watch a lot of comedy. And I think the standard of it is like if you're going to imitate somebody or poke a joke at somebody, it's out of understanding and respect. It's like, how do you see these white comedians go into like black areas where they have a completely black audience and they do a show where they talk about white people and they talk about black people and they talk about the differences and the things that they notice in these communities, and you have a crowd full of black people who are just cracking up at this white guy's jokes. And it's because they recognize, oh shoot, like this dude understands our community, this dude respects our community, and he's good at like putting together a joke that I understand because I live in it, and he understands because he's acknowledged it and he's noticed it. But this is just so off base, and the like to dislike ratio is very indicative of that. It's clear that you've seen something, you've made your own deduction of what that means, and placed your own agenda above actual understanding and getting what people's lives are like.
Well, the reason you don't get it is because you're a racist.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what Seth Rogen said. On Twitter, he tweeted out, we really pissed off tens of thousands of white supremacists with our new show, hashtag Santa Inc., which is now available on HBO Max. And a lot of people took to Twitter to respond to him. One person said, have you considered the audience rating isn't based on white supremacy and that maybe it's actually just not that good?
No, that is their level of hubris that they do not believe that their show could actually be bad or actually be out of touch. It must be because other people are racist. That is why they don't like it.
Yeah.
What a level of delusion to think that you are so high and mighty on your throne that nothing you make can be actual trash and that you did something so great and no one has the right to criticize it.
Right. I'm such a comedic god that it's simply not possible that I've created something that's garbage.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. This next tweet.
Make another weed smoking joke.
Right.
I'm
right.
Seth Rogen.
This next tweet was a response to it. Somebody even acknowledged, I'm sure that he got a lot of anti-Semitic criticism, which sucks. It doesn't make the show good, however.
They're trolls. So, I mean, the people if in the YouTube comments and stuff like that coming in anti-Semitic, whatever.
Right.
They're trolls. They're trolling you because of how stupid you are.
Right.
You know, like they're not going out hating Jews. They're going out and trolling you because you are trying to act as this high and mighty type of person. That is what they are trying to do.
Yep.
It's like the 4chan people coming out and trolling you.
Yeah. So maybe just create better content.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not so off base.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe be in touch with the society and the community that you live in and the people who consume your products. And maybe that will make your Rotten Tomato score go up.
Well, this is what washed up actors do.
Yeah.
They do things like this.
So yeah, we'll see what the next project from Seth Rogen is, but I imagine it won't be one for a long while. Especially probably not with HBO.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not with HBO.
But these people, you know, they can always do more stuff.
Does Seth Rogen have kids?
I don't
know. This is just a side note.
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know either. Taylor, do you know this?
Well, last time I talked to him,
No. Anyways, whatever. I'm going to segue into our next story, which is...
That's a great segue. Here is my segue into our next story.
I thought one of you would know whether or not he has kids, and then I would be able to make a segue off of it.
Oh.
Sometimes the segues fail, but...
Say, speaking of people we don't know about their kids...
Speaking of people who may or may not have kids, we're having trouble in that department here in America. Here's the article out of dailymail.co.uk. Just 18% of U.S. households are nuclear families with a married couple and children, down from 40% since the 1970s, the lowest since 1959. We've touched on this on the show quite a few times, but not recently at all. And it looks like the Census Bureau numbers are stark. They're very shocking. So again, this is the lowest it's been since 1959. We were functioning at about 40% of nuclear families with children under the age of 18 in 1970. Now we are at 18%. So specifically 17.8%.
Mm-hmm. 1970s, the economy started getting bad, then they started letting people in, then women get into the workforce, wages start to stagnate. Now wages are actually going down in this country. You have some of the most expensive things ever in this country. I mean, coal right now, getting coal, the price of coal is now down to or up to its highest price since 2009, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these things are happening in America to make it so that, you know, people can't even afford. I mean, some people can't even afford to have the two people working and still be in good economic standing, to have both the adults working. Then to imagine raising a kid in that and raising kids. And then if you're a conservative and you got to put the kids in private school because all the public schools are terrible, or you got to homeschool them, how are you supposed to do that? I mean, all of this is like, oh my goodness, this is terrible. And no wonder the rates of adults now having both. I posted this on my Instagram a couple of days ago. About the rates of people in America who used to just have the man provide and then now has both parents who are working. And the numbers are staggering. The men, now only one man providing since the 1950s, has gone totally down, and both parents working has gone totally up. That isn't an inherently bad thing, but it's an inherently bad thing because when the reason that people have to do that is because inflation has gotten so bad and wages have stagnated in this country since the 1980s that people feel like they need to go and do that.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to have a family and function well with a single income. I think that should be the case. And it's unfortunate that it's not the case. The numbers are, it's so weird to look at. And because we talked about this earlier this year, and even from then, it's gotten much worse. So the average age of a woman to first get married right now is 28.6 years, so 28 to 29. And in the 1950s and 60s, the typical woman was married at 20 to 21 years of age. Now the average age for a man to marry for the first time in 2021 is 30 to 31 years of age.
No, it's crazy.
That's wild.
You know, can you imagine getting married at 31 years old?
Could you imagine getting married at 30, Taylor?
Disgusting.
That would be crazy.
No, Taylor did the right thing. He found a beautiful woman who he is with. It's awesome. But in terms of societies looking at the data that have people where they start getting married after the age of 28, mm-hmm. societies crumble. Okay, you cannot sustain your population of a society or a nation when people are getting married after 28, especially when you have the rampant abortion that we have in this country and people not even having children once they get married. I mean, the birth rates are declining in this country at an alarming rate. Testosterone rates in this country are declining at an alarming rate exponentially for all age groups. So this is a huge problem. This is a massive problem that no one in Congress seems to care about. Republicans and Democrats don't seem to care about this. And no one in the mainstream media is really talking about this. But these types of problems are really the fabric of society. Because if you don't have people getting married and having children, your nation will die. Okay? Your civilization will crumble. Because other nations around the world, in the Middle East and all sorts of other places, not China, by the way, but other places, are having tons of children. If you want to save America, here's my advice to you right now. You want to save America, go have babies, okay? Go have babies, well, if you want to save America.
Get married and find a partner and then have your babies.
Well, obviously, yes. But get married and have babies, okay? That is your mission to save
America. By the way, I saw today, Wall Street Journal, Elon Musk said, civilization is going to crumble unless people have more children.
Yep. Exactly, right? It's happening. It's for sure happening. Declining birth rates are the problem. But the left wants to convince you that their Malthusianist principles of saying the world is getting overpopulated and there's way too many people on this earth and we are a parasite on this earth and that you should no longer have children for it. They want to tell you that. It's a blatant lie.
It's so many bad ideas converging too, because couple that with the lies of modern feminism, selling women the false bill of goods that, oh, you'll be happier and more fulfilled if you don't get married until you're 28 or 30 or 33 and waiting as long as possible to have kids. And you deserve to have this independent life and enjoy your 20s and live it up. And you would be much happier just being selfish and making life all about you for another dozen years after you're 20 or whatever. And marriage, that's not going to make you happy. Kids are a drag. And that's been the whole narrative that like you'll be free. And you talk about declining wages too, the feminism of women should enter the workforce. Okay, well, you got that. And that's what flattened wages, because now you've doubled the workforce. There's double the supply of labor. What do you think is going to happen to the average compensation?
Right. So,
and immigrants. I mean, the immigrants are the same way. I mean, you used to have old factories in America that were doing totally fine with so many people who were born in this country who are working at these factories. And then you have immigrants come in who basically drop the wages of all these types of factories. And you would think that the mainstream media would come in and this would be some sort of tale about how when we open our borders, it destroys our inner fabric as a country. But no, this is a tale of how these immigrants are coming in and it's making all their lives better. And it's about because people are racist. I mean, this is we live in a sick country. We live in a sick country, and it is on the verge of collapse because of these types of things.
Yeah, and the thing is, people want to have kids. They're being disincentivized to have them. Women are being told they should slave away to their careers and to push kids to a later date. They're being told that kids bear burden on the environment and that they shouldn't do it. Or, you know, they're being told, or they're in the position where they can't afford it. And that they can't raise their kids in the way that they would like to because they can't do it on a single income. They need a double income, which means both parents working, which means not being able to properly raise your kids as a mother and father should be able to. So it's really difficult. And we should never forget that individuals without families are weaker and they are so much easier to control. It's so much easier for a government to take over with tyranny and draconian measures and all these things if we are just a nation of individuals with no families, which is a nuclear family is the strongest unit and thing that you can build in your life. It's one of the best things that you can do as an individual. And we know that biologically, we know that because it makes us happier. We know that in the way that the societies function, we know that when governments incentivize families and help people to create strong family units that stay together with two parents that raise their kids all the way to 18 or to whatever age, we know that that's better for nations.
And I mean, the evidence supports that too. Like incarceration rates are much lower for children from two parent households. Test scores are higher. Wealth and obesity, like health, others by every available measure, basically, someone who's raised in a family unit is better off than someone who's not.
Yep.
Even community service and volunteering and amount of money that you donate to charity is better when you are married.
Yep.
Men make more money. I mean, it's just
everything is better.
So, yeah.
Well, the men making more money is very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Everything is better when you live in a two parent household. And unfortunately, that is declining and declining significantly. And people should be worried about it. Our government should be worried about it. Everybody should be worried about it.
I don't have any kids, but I want kids.
That you know of.
That I know of, you know. But my goal in life is to be a dad. That's like my number one thing that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it should be a lot of people's thing that they're looking forward to. And unfortunately, I think for females, being tricked out of looking forward to it is really, really devastating. So now we have a lot of women getting to an older age, getting married later, thinking about kids far later, and then either not having them or not having the amount of kids they wanted, dealing with infertility and all the different hormone problems that we're having right now in our species. There's so many problems associated with this, and they do have so many tangible effects on our society and the way we run, like Taylor said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
case in point, my wife is a very smart, successful woman, and she makes more money than me, has a great job, a great career woman. And now that she's into her career and doing great, she's, what does she want to do more than anything? Not work, have right. children, and she would be much happier doing that. And that's where we're headed. But it goes to show you. And anyways, I'm not going to go into right. her whole story arc, but it's a reality that I'm living with, and you know, the more I think I'm seeing her get happier, but also getting like increasingly red pilled, and yep. it's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful thing. That's amazing.
It is.
That's so good.
Mm-hmm. Now,
surprised you admitted that she made more money than you on here, though.
What? Why are you surprised? Because Will won't tell anybody how much he makes. Not even his wife, as we've discussed on the show before. Oh, now he's saying he would tell his wife.
I would think about it. But but what is...
That's just more leverage for me when I talk to Craig at my end of year review this year.
You listening, Craig?
Well, Craig...
You're a true conservative. You better pay the man more.
Yeah, he'd be like, he knows.
We can't have that.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Now... What do people do with their money that they make from their job? They go and buy groceries. But if you live in New Brunswick, Canada, that might be pretty difficult for you. Here's a story right now happening in Canada. Grocery stores in New Brunswick can now refuse to sell food to people who didn't take mRNA injections. How am I supposed to eat? Says Brett. Here's the highlighted plan here when it goes into effect. The entire province will be in level one, the lowest level of restrictions, and includes the following rules and guidelines. The highlighted part here reads, malls, grocery stores, salons have option of requiring proof of vaccination from all patrons. This is level one of regulations, the lowest level.
Here is what I absolutely despise and hate, is that maybe 6 months, anywhere from 6 months to a year ago, okay, when these vaccines were starting, all this stuff was happening, I said this was going to happen. I said this will probably happen. I said that the vax passes are probably going to happen. And all these conservative people said, no, you can't talk about it. You're going to be a conspiracy theorist. You can't talk about any of this mm-hmm. stuff, all right? You got to keep your head, keep level. And I was talking about it then. And all of them labeled me as a conspiracy theorist. And now this crap is happening. This is happening right now where they are putting in vax passports to go to a grocery store. You can't go and eat. They have the choice to make it so that you can't go to a grocery store and get food for your family because you don't take an experimental vaccine. How screwed up is that?
That's ridiculous.
So all these people who are coming and saying, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, all these kind of things, to any of you guys who are going out and talking about this, tell all those people to screw right off, because this stuff will happen immediately. It'll happen so quickly, you have no idea. Like the people, like all these people, when Purdue Pharma was getting taken down for the opiate epidemic, okay, and how they lied to people and said, oh, this wasn't addictive. Only 1% of people get addicted from opiates. What did they do? They told the people, the parents, concerned parents of dead children, the doctors who came out against it. They said they were nut jobs. They said they were lunatics and crazy people. Mm-hmm. That is what they labeled these people who were protesting Purdue Pharma and the other pharmaceutical companies putting out OxyContin for people that was destroying West Virginia and the rest of America. Mm-hmm. And they were labeled those types of people. Now what? Now all of those doctors and all of those parents, they were proven exactly right. Every single thing that they said when they were going and talking to Purdue Pharma was exactly right. Screw anyone who comes and tells you that you are a conspiracy theorist for calling these things out, because this is how authoritarianism happens. It happens by people telling you that you're crazy for thinking about it, or they're saying, oh, it's going to happen. They want to make you feel like you are crazy. Right. You are not crazy. These things are going to happen and they will continue to get worse, and you have to keep educating people, call your senators, all of these different things, and tell them we do not want authoritarianism here.
Yeah, and it's a trap that people all over the place fall into of, oh, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. That couldn't possibly happen. And we've seen it not just in America, but in every country saying that, oh, it's not possible. It's not possible. It's so easy to say it's not possible. It is so hard to truly grapple with the reality and the stepping stones of where we're headed. And to see this out of Canada, it doesn't mean you're only going to see it there. We're going to see it in other places. This is beyond second class citizenry. This is almost imprisonment. You can't go out and buy groceries for your family. What? Oh, but you have Uber Eats and you got DoorDash and you're working from home on your laptop. So just use your technology to order everything to your little prison home. And we don't want to see you again because you've chosen not to get this medical treatment. It is absolutely ridiculous. And to think that this is level one of what they're doing. What's level two? What's level three?
Austria now has forced vaccinations for people. Forced vaccinations in Austria, okay, where you either get fined or potentially go to jail if you do not if you are not vaccinated in that country. Mm-hmm. I mean, for people not to wake up and see this, I mean, you have to be living under a rock, or you have to be so disillusioned with what the mainstream media and people who are on the left have told you that you cannot see this and see the signs. I mean, I understand it. I understand why you can't see, because you are inundated with nonsense and misinformation all day. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I am telling you guys, go out and talk to people. Do not care what any of these people label you as, what they tell you that you are, what they call you. Do not care about any of those things. Because if you care about the future of your country, you care about the future of your own self, you will go out and not care what anyone thinks. And you will tell people the truth. That is what you are called to do.
Yeah, you know, yesterday we were talking about, you know, working from home and the Great Resignation, and how a lot of people are saying, well, working from home is so great. Think about the implication of this if this goes on for what I don't even want to speculate on how many years or months this continues to go on. I think a big part of this restructuring of the way that we work and working from home is a massive way to isolate people to where you're now only living within your own bubble with your own families, if you even have one, which we just said the story that people are not having families. So now you're an individual with maybe a spouse or a boyfriend or just by yourself or a dog living in your own little apartment that you're renting because you can't buy a house here in America, and you wake up every morning and you go on your laptop. Oh wait, you can't go to the grocery store because you don't have proof of vaccination. Maybe you fake your vaccination, maybe you don't. So now we're not going outside to see people anymore because we can't go to restaurants, we can't go to bars, we can't go to a sports game, we can't even go buy groceries anymore. Now you are just this individual who's getting constantly everything delivered to the home. You're using the streaming services. You're working from your laptop. You're not doing anything. You are not living a life. What type of life is this preserving? And I find it hard to think that any of this working from home stuff is good, that any of this technological advancement is good, because all it is doing is seeking to put us in these little pods that we live in for the rest of our lives and to never see, you know, another human or have a community like we had one before. It's ridiculous.
It really is. It is worse than ever. I mean, when it comes to the COVID stuff, I talked about this a little bit on my Instagram the other day about how if you guys follow me on social media, follow me on Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is, I basically, COVID is my topic that I talk about. When I go home, I'm researching this. I am reading every single night. That is what I do, because this is the worst overreach of government that I think America has had to deal with in ever. I think ever. With everything I've read about American history. And I can tell you that things will continue to get worse.
Yep.
Things will continue to get worse unless you stand up and do something. Hold these people accountable. Hold their asses to the fire and make sure that they get burned, because this is getting so terrible. And a place like Canada, a place like Europe, they are 3 to 6 months ahead of us in all of these types of things, okay? If you think that this can happen in America, it can. It definitely can.
And it's happening so easily because we have no connection to each other anymore. We are not having families. We don't have communities. We're not going into the office to see people. We can't see people smile because everybody's masked up. You have no connection to your fellow human beings. You truly think about that. Truly think about the lack of connection that we now have with the people who live right next door to us, or the people who have lived in our communities for as much time as we have, to our fellow neighbors, to our peers. There is nothing there. Even a piece of cloth to cover up the emotions that you have on your face is between you and the person next to you. It's ridiculous. And it's got to be just degrading to the human condition and to the human psyche.
It is.
It's like, going to make us so weak and susceptible to this.
Oh, it is.
It already has.
Yeah, yep. It already is. I mean, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who believe they're free. That's Goethe. Amazing. And it's like, listen, I don't want to just be doom and gloom on here telling you guys it's going to get worse and you need to be scared and grab your AR-15s and all that kind of stuff. I'm not trying to tell you guys that. But what I am saying is that you need to be prepared for the worst. You need to be prepared for what could happen. And you need to be someone who is a fighter in this world to go back and tell these people and say, here's what's really going on. And talk to people you love, talk to people who you don't love, talk to everyone and tell them the truth.
What did Dr. Fauci say? Oh, I'm not going to say what's going to happen with this new variant, but prepare yourself for the worst.
The new variant is a psyop. I mean, it is them telling you like, oh, it's mild. They did this the same thing with the Delta variant. They did this when COVID first started. Every single time there's a new variant, they say, oh, this new variant is not that bad. You know, it's fine. It's like, it's mild. There's no need for concern, you know, says Dr. Fauci. And then what happens? Oh, well, now 2 weeks go by. Now it's the plague. Now it's the worst thing ever. I'm sure that's going to happen with this new Omicron variant. Mm-hmm. They're going to say that this new variant is the plague and that all of us have to do all these draconian measures again. You got to do the vax. You got to do all this kind of stuff. They're going to say the exact same things again. So don't buy into the hype that they're saying, oh, it's mild now. It's not that big of a deal. They will change it immediately. They will change it on a dime to say, oh, it's actually the plague. And people will lock and step, follow them. And
yeah.
And everything.
Don't buy anything from the media unless it's freaking Pfizer and Moderna stock, because then you'll probably be rich. It's just ridiculous what is happening right now. And the media is not being truthful. And it's one thing to hear Will and I say that the media is lying to you. It's another thing to hear it from somebody who is working with the media, or at least was working with the media. We did an interview with a man by the name of Brett Mauser, who you may recognize as being the most recent whistleblower for Project Veritas. He was working for CBS, a company called Ken's out of San Antonio. Here's that interview with Brett Mauser. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. We have an interesting guest on the show today, Brett Mauser. You may recognize his face if you follow Project Veritas and James O'Keefe, because he's a whistleblower out of San Antonio, CBS. Brett, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I want to hop right into it because I think nobody can tell the story of, you know, your whistleblowing and you talking about what's happening in terms of journalism in America better than you can. So what got you linked up with Project Veritas and how did you become a whistleblower?
Well, it originally started about a year ago when I was just decided to take one of our multicultural trainings, which was where they told us not to be objective journalists anymore. And I recorded it basically just for posterity and also to be able to bring it as evidence to my management to be able to say, hey, look, this is what was taught. Is this appropriate? And just kind of to cover myself, to have evidence to present. And I didn't plan on it going anywhere. And then it wasn't until this past election when Project Veritas did a story here in San Antonio about voter harvesting. And they didn't, I sent an email to my manager and said, hey, look, this is going on locally. Is there something that we can, are we going to do anything about this? And about 2 or 3 days later, I got an email back saying, oh, well, we looked into it. Project Veritas is just a right-wing organization. This was a hoax. She was on another channel and said she knew the cameras were there. And I was like, all right. And then 2 or 3 months later, she was arrested. And they still didn't do a story on it. So at that point, I reached out and sent them an email. And I said, hey, you know, if I can help out, let me know. And then from there, it just it was just a little contact here and there. And then I wound up having more of the the implicit bias training. And I was there ready with all my notes to counter the arguments in the training itself. And of course, they muted our mics, so I wasn't able to say much. So that's basically how it came to be. And I started going in, reporting some of the things that were going on, getting things like my manager saying things like, when I was talking about masks, you know, and presenting that children aren't really, you know, are not affected that greatly by it. Him saying, I don't want to debate the science. I'm not going to debate the science with you. People are afraid. Doesn't matter whether it's true or not. We're journalists. We're supposed to be all about the truth.
Well, I'm glad that you came forward and tried to reach out and do something about this, because it's so often people like Will and I, we talk about how journalism and journalistic integrity is really no longer intact in this country, but it's so important to hear people who actually work in the field come out against it and say something. Now, you mentioned that one of the higher ups during this training said, you know, journalism is no longer about objectivity. We need to stop focusing on objectivity. Can you add context to that? What did she mean when she said we shouldn't focus on objectivity?
Well, there in the Project video, Project Veritas video, you can see some of the B-roll and some of the other additional slides that they had presented. And one of them specifically said, inclusive journalism is not talking to both sides. and other steps such as don't seek interviews from both sides. Just look for thoughtful interviews. And then, of course, saying we have to explain the issue so that people understand it, not just present facts. So it just the initial statement of saying, well, there's objective, being objective is just no longer feasible. That can kind of be taken a little bit differently, but when you start delving into the slot, the additional slides and the additional bullet points, you see specifically that they're saying that the journalist is supposed to be deciding and going towards a biased viewpoint and looking at the and the training specifically pointed out social justice and the diversity. And how if you're not paying attention, you're not watching the podcast, then you just don't care. And so it is, you know, they're in plain writing and not only just writing, but speaking exactly what their new agenda is, that they are pushing an agenda. And that was sort of the tipping point for me, because even about halfway through the training, I was like, okay, well, maybe this isn't that bad. And that's when it clicked on me that they were dividing us into race and social economic status and sexual orientation, and they wanted us to list what we thought was most important in order of these factors. And that's when I realized, oh, this is Marxism. They're teaching us to divide among oppressor and oppressed, and that's not where this country needs to be going. And that's sort of, that was the tipping point for me, because there were moments where I was like, well, do I want to do this? Do I want to stand up? But it was that last training that I said, no, I've got to do something, because they're dividing this country intentionally to what ends, I can only guess. Mm.
And for people who don't know where this is, where did this happen?
This was in San Antonio, Texas.
Great. One thing that you were talking about with James O'Keefe while you were in your... when you were talking with him, was about history, and you were talking about Russia. Now, I'm reminded about the Russian newspaper that was literally called Pravda, which meant truth, and basically the entire thing was full of lies. When you are seeing things happening right now in journalism in America and seeing analogies when it comes to Russia and other communist countries, what does that look like for the future of this country?
I think it's, as a history buff, I think you have to look at those events and realize that we're on the same road. I just watched a documentary about Greece and the Battle of Thermopylae and how the country, you know, that Greece was just a bunch of tribes and a bunch of small little communities. But when the Battle of Thermopylae happened, it brought everybody together and they were now Greek. It wasn't this community, that community. And the exact same thing is happening in reverse now. They are splitting us into groups so that we're easier to defeat. We're no longer Americans. We've got to be this community, that community. And there's no, they're trying to break away that pride of being an American and putting labels on us. And that fractures the morale and the ethics of the country. And that eventually will lead to our downfall, just the way you see in Venezuela, just the way you saw in Cuba, just the way you're seeing it in Russia. And it is that end goal, I believe, which is trying to bring down this great experiment that is the democracy of America.
One thing that I hear a lot when talking to people about this kind of stuff, and kind of what you were saying when you were like, oh, maybe this isn't that big of a deal. When you talk to people who are on the other side, or maybe who are these people giving this type of presentation to you, they say, well, this isn't that big of a deal. You know, you just have to get with the times. This is what's going on now in America. Okay. These old things that we used to do in journalism, they're outdated. And now we're working on something else. When you hear the argument from people where they say, this isn't that big of a deal, what do you respond to tell them?
Well, I'll say two things to that. I had confronted a reporter, a fellow promotions producer after the training and said this was Marxism. And he was like, well, I just don't see that. And my response was, well, just because you don't see it doesn't mean that's not what it is. By definition, that's what this is. The sky is blue, the grass is green. This is Marxism. But I do also tell them, you've got to look back at history. The infamous quote, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And we're seeing that time and time and time again, especially when it blows my mind that people can just push Venezuela out of their mind and not see the same things are happening. Of course, you have the infamous Einstein quote. You know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, then that's the definition of insanity. And that's what socialism is they're trying to do this over and over and over again, and it doesn't work. And the way they get through to socialism or communism is this Marxist doctrine of separating and dividing people and making one person, you know, one group of people, the fall guys, the bad guys. I try to emphasize history. You know, I have a YouTube show as well, and always bringing in history to prove the point. It doesn't diverge. The path is constantly always the same. And to think that, well, this time will be different because I'm in charge or this person is in charge, is just pure egotism. You know, it's you've got to understand the way people are, and you know, humans are going to human, and that's the understanding that and understanding history can help you avoid these pitfalls and can help prevent America from falling down the same path as a Venezuela or a Russia.
Yeah, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but Albert Einstein also said that mediocre minds will always try and destroy people who think outside the box. And that seems very indicative of the same place that journalism is in now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Brett, I have one more question for you, because everybody is so scared to come forward. They're scared to be the whistleblower. They're scared to be you. What has been the response to what you've done? Have you gotten support, hate? How are things at work now with who you are and what you've done with Project Veritas?
Well, I'm no longer at Ken's. Of course, there were vaccine mandates and all that stuff, and I needed to get out. My family has some health issues, so I want to devote some time to them. But in terms of the fallout, of course, when you're thinking about doing this, all sorts of things are running through your mind. Oh, what's going to happen? Am I going to lose friends? Am I going to lose family members? And overall, it's been, the support has just been incredible. Even former reporters and anchors have contacted me and thanked me for what they did, because they left the news industry because of this very thing. So there has been a great amount of support. There, of course, are the naysayers. There was, within 5 minutes of it coming out, there was a YouTuber calling me an old white man that was scared of someone who didn't agree with him. And anyone who's seen my show knows that that's completely not the case. I love debate. I love arguing. And I love talking about alternate opinions. And of course, you know, Tegna, the station, the corporation that owns Ken's and all the other stations, came out with their statement, which basically doubled down on it and said that I was the reason that they needed this sort of training. Then they said that I wasn't even news personnel. But when I'm able to come on to play, you know, shows like yours, I can just rebut that and debunk their accusations and whatnot. So I do recommend that if you feel cornered and that you do want to speak out and you see things like this happening, do it. It's not as bad. The fallout is not as bad as you think it is. And there are so many other support structures there. There are other whistleblowers and other insiders that are there to support you and give you the advice that you need. And it's a great community. And I don't let fear keep you from speaking out the truth. That was one of the reasons that I had to do this, is I looked down the road and I said, this is where we're headed. I don't want to be watching the train cars go by and not have done something. And this is what I felt was something that I could do to stand up and try to prevent that from happening.
Amen. Well, how can people keep up with you, Brett?
Well, I have a website called notsosane.com. I try and teach people how to make films with no money. That was sort of my pet project. And that's I have a show where I try to teach people about the things that go on behind the scenes of an independent film, so they can be prepared, and help them know that they don't need Hollywood. They don't need to go through the Hollywood politics and all of that. You can just make your own movie. And that's I'm not so sane.com. I have a lot of our episodes there, and of course on YouTube, we have our series Not So Sane Men on YouTube.
Great. Well, we appreciate you being on, man. Thank you for your insight and for being brave and sharing this and standing up for truth. Need more people like you, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
True patriot.
Honestly, yeah, it's truly brave to step out of what is happening around you when everybody is just walking in lockstep towards this sort of groupthink and this herd mentality when it comes to this diversity, equity, inclusion, and objectivity, as they said. Like, we don't need to be objective as journalists anymore. Such a crazy thing to hear and to go along with. So good on Brett for stepping out of that and calling them out. Now we're going to get into a story. Sometimes woke ideology and woke speak, as I call it, tends to come back to bite the leftists. And here's a case where this has happened. Here's a survey out of Politico that Politico conducted around the term Latinx, specifically reaching out to Hispanic, Latino, Latina people and asking them how they feel about the term Latinx. Now, I want to go through some of this. The sample size of this was 800 registered voters who are Hispanic, Latina, Latino, as we refer to them, the Latinx, as the left would refer to them. Now, here's question number one. Which of the following terms comes closest to describing your ethnic background? 68% said Hispanic, 21% said Latina or Latino, 8% said something else, only 2% said Latinx. So it's obviously a very useful term.
Obviously, 98% of those Hispanics are racist.
Right, 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 right. And then we'll go through some more of these here. They asked which of the following again. They broke this down by Democrat and Republican. Which of the following terms comes closest to describing your ethnic background? Now, the Democrat Hispanic people, 2% of them said Latinx. Republicans, 4% of them said that Latinx comes closest to describing their
background.
What
the hell?
And independents, 1%. So the independents tend to be where it's at when it comes to this. That's really, like, really interesting.
That is confounding.
That is confounding.
I have no hypothesis of why that would be the case.
Yeah, yeah. That's very strange.
That is very, very interesting.
Miscount.
Now, here's another one. When it comes to, is the term offensive? Does the use of the term Latinx to describe the Hispanic or Latina community bother or offend you? Now, as far as no, it doesn't bother me, we saw about 55 to 62% across the age ranges say no, it doesn't bother me at all. But 30 to 50% said yes, it bothered them in some way, shape, or form. It's really interesting across all age ranges.
That's when you do say it offends them.
Yeah, that they said the term Latinx offends me, and that you should just use Latina or Hispanic,
or Mexican, or.
Well, if they're from Mexico,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, or Salvadorian, or wherever you're from.
Right, right, right. So it turns out that the Latin community, the community that the left is purporting to help with the term Latinx, doesn't particularly care for it. And it's not really jiving well with the use of the term Latinx.
No, they don't like Latinx.
Are we surprised?
Like when I went to the Navajo reservation, and, you know, you're supposed to call Native Americans Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them were like, we're Indians. You know, they call themselves Indians when you go to the reservation. So many of them actually say that. Like, they don't call themselves really Native Americans that much. You know, like these branded names that these white leftists give to these cultural groups is all for themselves. It's not for the people they're actually trying to help.
It really is. It's just for virtue. It's just to say, well, look what I did. Because, and for those of you who don't know the background about why the term Latinx even exists, it's because the left thought, or whoever came up with Latinx, the woke leftist, thought that Latina and Latino were too gendered with the A and the O. Even though Spanish is a highly gendered language, they thought that was far too gendered. So Latinx could be something that you could use to refer to anybody.
Latinx.
Yeah, it turns out
Latinx
Hispanic
is much
people,
funner to say. I mean, yeah. It's probably Latinx.
It's definitely Latinx.
Latinx.
Latinx is
yeah,
great.
Latinx.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, my old leftist coworkers are rolling in, not their graves.
If you said
they're
Latinx,
just rolling. Yeah, it's Latinx, 100%.
They would be upset about me?
I don't know that they would be upset at you, but they definitely tell you you're saying it wrong.
They just roll their eyes because you're an ignorant bigot.
Right. Exactly right.
Why don't you go, I don't know.
It reminds me a lot of like what happened in France when they said, you know, we're going to try to move towards like gender neutral language and people going for their pronouns and calling those out. And France said, absolutely not. You are not restructuring the very basis of our language, which is also highly gendered. Same thing that's happening here. I was like, why are you trying to change our language that we've put together and we have a direct science for, a direct set of linguistics for, and then you're going to come in and take the A and the O off and put an X there?
Well, they're already words. Latino and Latina are already words. Right. Hispanic's already a word. Latinx is just something some college professor probably made up.
Yeah.
Hispanic is already a gender neutral word.
I know. It just makes absolutely no sense.
Hispanx.
Hispanx.
That sounds like an innuendo.
But no, I just thought this was a fun little tidbit, and it just goes to show like the policies and the changes and the cultural shifts that the leftists advocate for are usually not really well received by the communities that they claim to be advocating for.
Of course not. It's all virtue signaling and pandering.
Yeah. Guys, write down below in the chat or once the show is over, what's your favorite leftist term and why?
Yeah. Or if you want us to refer to, maybe we could refer to our whole audience as Willanomla X's.
Willanomla X's, yeah. Live X's.
Wamalaxes.
Yeah. Wamalaxes. Yeah. Maybe that's, yeah, maybe that's your guys' the stand name.
Mm-hmm. Prager UX. Prager X.
Prager X.
That sounds like something dirty. So maybe
does
not
does it?
One.
Let's not, only if you have a weird mind, Will.
I'm sure many people were thinking the same thing.
Oh, well, yeah, if they're a fan of you, they probably were.
Probably. Well, I don't have any fans, but just normal people also, too.
Yeah, if you guys put your terms down, maybe we'll share them on the show, on our next show. Guys, that is the end of our show today. You guys have any other interesting tidbits you'd like to share with anybody before we close out?
In my church in Los Angeles, they did a prayer one day, and the... He wasn't like the pastor, but they let some other person pray. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt. But they were like, and we just pray for all of our Latinx. I think he said Latinx. I can't remember if he said Latinx or Latinx. But he said Latinx from the stage in a prayer at church. And I'm like, that is, because here's my problem with it. That word is a signal that it's an implicit endorsement of gender ideology. Because you're saying, by using that term, like unironically, you're literally saying, You're normalizing it. You're affirming it. You're saying this is the word that we should use. Right. And that word stems from gender ideology, which to me is anti-biblical and at least anti-biological, anti-science, anti-fact. And so the fact that I was like, that has no place in the church. And I wrote a email to my pastor about it and we talked about it. And long story short, I'm not going to that church anymore. But,
good. I was just going to say, yeah. I was like, you shouldn't go to that church anymore.
You know what I say to that?
What?
A woman.
Mm-hmm. We haven't posted. We did a skit a year ago about that. I need to bring that one back.
A woman.
The woman.
Shahermi Changa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. Stuff.
Oh, guys. One. Well, yeah, maybe we should do that too. Also, if you guys want to put your non-gendered terms down in the comments below, try to find your gendered terms and fix them. We fixed amen to a woman. A great stride for the female demographic, I think.
Mm-hmm. Womangitis. That's what I got right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Also a great strike.
We need to play a game where we gender neutralize everything. Or like,
that would be great. You know, neutralize it?
Yeah, exactly. We haven't done that in a while.
Maybe we'll do that on a fun Friday for you guys. Let us know down in the comments again whether or not you'd like to see that happen. Also, play your own. Try to neutralize some words for us down below. Help us fix our language because we know it needs fixing. The left tells us so. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will be back at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. Guys, leave us a like, a comment, subscribe, click the notification bell. And if you want to listen to us either today, tomorrow, over the weekend, go to Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review there. Follow us. You know, give us as many stars as you possibly can on these apps so that people find us and they start listening to this podcast because I think it can be helpful or at the very least entertaining.
Yes.
Yes.
Also, go to prager.com/jobs. Check out our available job openings so you could work in an office where Will Witt is from 11 to 2 most days.
Exactly. You can hear Will burp.
Yeah.
All day long. 1:30
to 3:30.
Yep.
Yeah.
Every weekday.
Whether he needs to be here or not.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Bye, guys.